Hello, everyone. Welcome to Notes from the Margin. This month, we're going to be talking about the point of the Scout Law, trustworthy. Jess, what do you think the definition of trustworthy is?
Basic definition of trust for me and trustworthiness is doing what you say you are going to do. So if you make a promise to someone, if you say you're going to do something at work, you follow through, and if you can't, you're honest about it and you're accountable. How about you?
It's like you were reading my notes. Do what you say, follow through on that, be accountable, admit when you're wrong, and follow through on any corrections or anything you need to do to fix what you were wrong about. Consistency and dependability are part of it too, I think.
So you hit on something. Why is it so hard for people to admit when they're wrong?
It's a scary thing. You're afraid of what people's reaction will be. There's an ego piece where you don't like to be wrong, and it's sometimes hard to admit when you are. Mm-hmm. It feels very critical to me, especially when you're talking about trustworthy, but just the vulnerability involved, it actually gets pretty addicting once you're open to being vulnerable. It just removes a level of complexity in how you communicate because you just put it out there.
I agree. So being vulnerable, admitting you made a mistake, or even saying that you did not do something you were supposed to do, to me, creates more trust than skirting around it and pretending like it never happened or making an excuse for why it didn't happen.
Yeah, the part I throw in there is it's got to be authentic. It can't be performative, just saying, oh, I know I'm wrong. You've got to mean it, and your follow through has to be authentic.
And I can certainly tell when someone is not being authentic, that they're just trying to put a Band-Aid on it and move on. Mm-hmm. So it's when you see that true authenticity and then you give them the chance to bounce back from that mistake and prove to you that they learned something is so incredibly powerful, because chances are, if you treat them with that respect, they're not going to do the same thing again. And they're going to feel safe coming to you if they make another error or something is going wrong. So then that only builds a stronger relationship.
Yeah, well said. Our podcast series is about how the Scout Law might influence how people behave in business and might be a choice people make. So let's take it back to scouting. Why is trustworthy in the Scout Law? Why is it the first point of the Scout Law?
To me, because scouts are prepared. So everything we do in the program, even when they start out as kindergartners and Cub Scouts, we teach them what it means to be prepared. So we give them necessary life skills to be successful, to take care of themselves, the world, and others around them. And as they get older, as they become Eagle Scouts, they do a lot in terms of life-saving, first aid, cooking, family life. They do a lot of activities that really show the importance of being a good person and why it's so important to have that foundation. And by doing so, it creates trust.
Yeah. And I've heard you talk about this in meetings and your Scoutmaster Minutes, that it is the place where they can fail. So to your point before, we provide a place where it's safe for them to make mistakes and to learn, which anyone that understands this knows that to learn, you are going to make mistakes. And that's a core component of learning. So we provide that safe environment where they can make those mistakes, can feel that it's okay to fail and learn from it and move on.
That's spot on. And when I'm talking to my scouts and when they start in the program, say they're going for their scout rank and it's our first Scoutmaster conference, and all the way up to their earning star, life scout, I haven't had an eagle yet, working on that. I always tell them, if you cannot do something, if you signed up to do something, but something in your life happened, you have school, you're in sports, you are all beyond scouts, you're very talented, smart individuals, just admit that you can't do it. And that's okay, because then we will help you figure out how to get it done or find someone to help you or make a new plan. And that's so powerful. It's like, it's okay, but just be honest and upfront about it. So I like to set that expectation. And to me, that creates an incredible amount of trust.
Yeah, that's similar to what we talked about with when you make a mistake, being vulnerable mm-hmm. about it. Same concept.
Yeah. And, you know, we keep coming back to this quote where it's like, people should know that you're a scout, even when you're not in uniform. So it's like they see someone, they know that they're going to hold a door open. They know that if somebody spills their groceries all over the floor, they're going to be the first one there to help pick them up or open a car door or be on the lookout for just any way to help, because it's just they're who they are by nature.
Do a good turn daily.
That's it. That's exactly right. So that's what they expect. And then if you research, there are so many incredible stories about heroism with our scouts. That's what, you know, they take first aid, they take life saving. They're taught how to react in an emergency situation. So if you have a scout with you in any context, chances are you able to trust that you have somebody who's going to know what to do and be brave and live out the rest of the law. So as you're saying, it all kind of interweaves itself into the law.
Yeah, that's a, that's another piece. In my view, all points of the scout law are interdependent. But even looking at that, trustworthy does feel like it is kind of a base of all the other points, even though they all depend on each other. So that we learned this in scouting. That's something we talk about with our scouts all the time. Where do you think this fits in the real world? Not even the business world at this point, but just in the real world.
Holy crap. Everywhere. Right?
Yeah.
So things we don't even think about. But now I challenge you to look around and say, wow, how many instances of trust are there on a daily basis? Okay, so you're driving. Okay, first and foremost, we know everyone is the best driver. Everyone else is the worst driver. But you trust that the people in that car are going to follow the rules of the road, right? They're going to stop at stop signs. They're going to stop at the traffic light. They're going to use their turn signal. We trust it's going to happen, but does it? No. And I think that's why we get so frustrated as drivers, because we are trusted with these huge automobiles that we're not just going to crash into one another. And so that kind of drives me nuts, that I'm trusting that we know how to do this four-way stop or take a roundabout properly. So think about that. And in the bank, when we were preparing for this too, I was thinking about that scene at the end of It's a Wonderful Life and how they got to that point. It's like, well, your money's in so-and-so's house and so-and-so's house. And they're all on poor George Bailey about where their money is. And then you think about the stock market crash and everybody was trusting these banks that they had their money and they didn't. So now we have the FDIC. We have these other checks and balances to make sure that we can trust our systems and structures that we have in place as a society.
So people are generally going to do the right thing, try and help, which feeds into trustworthy.
And I think sometimes in a crisis situation is really when people do show their best selves and come to help and genuinely want to show that they care about you, even though you're just a stranger. And that's another really great example of trust.
Yeah, there's, I think Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, had a quote. I don't remember what particular situation, but he said, always look for the helpers. Mm-hmm. And those are the people we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But what about work? It's all fine and dandy in scouts, in the real world, but work, it's very complex.
Can be. I was doing some research on statistics around whether trust in leadership, trust in teams, is actually, there's any benefit to it from a profitability or any other metrics. There was a Gallup study. It was a meta study of gathering data from a whole bunch of other studies. But one of the quotes in the results were, 23% higher profitability, 18% higher sales productivity, 78% lower absenteeism, 63% fewer safety incidents, and dramatically lower turnover in more trusted, better-led work environments. And one of the more important academic findings is that stated values alone don't predict performance, but employees' belief that leaders are trustworthy and ethical does. And I think we talked about that in our last podcast, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. it's great to have these flashy signs and pretty posters all over the place saying mm-hmm. what your values mm-hmm. are, but if they are not lived and not demonstrated, no one cares.
Oh my gosh, that just struck a chord. So I did work at an organization that had the lowest safety rating in all of the different branches, bottom of the barrel in terms of safety. And doing some self-reflection on that, it's because they absolutely did not trust their employees. They said, oh, they just hurt themselves. Let's fire them. Well, did you teach them how to use the machine? Did you empower them and flip that around on them to say, yeah, I'm trusting you with this huge forklift. You know, I'm going to trust that you are going to follow these safety rules because I care about you. So it's so incredibly important that you flip your lens on that.
Yep. So at my old job, probably 6 years ago now, maybe 7 years ago, I think it was pre-COVID, I had he is someone that I'd known for 10 or more years, but he had come onto my team, I don't know, a year before that. And we had just put him on a new project with a new customer. We'd done a little bit of work with them, but this was one of the first big projects we were doing with them. And about, I want to say a month after he started the project, his teenage daughter was diagnosed with a cancer that had questionable survivability. And I was faced with, okay, I've got a guy that needs to pay attention and focus on his family, but I've got a customer that we need to do the work for that they expect us to do that we're legally bound to do. So what I did was tell him that he could go take care of his family and do as much work as he thought he could, but not to worry about being billable, which anyone in the consulting industry knows that that's a pretty big statement. We actually went to a partner competitor, and found someone to outsource or to subcontract with, to take over the work from him. This probably, I want to say 8 months, which his daughter recovered in remission, perfectly fine. What happened was the subcontractor we had, and this was partly due to us, partly due maybe to the customer. We weren't listening well enough to what the customer was telling us, that he was not satisfied with what the subcontractor was doing. Felt like that guy was repeating a lot of the work that my employee had been doing. And eventually got to the point where, you know, this was probably 5 months of work. He wanted, basically asked for $100,000 credit, which would not have been financially healthy for us. Getting too trustworthy here. So first of all, my employee, and I don't want to use his name. Not that we weren't already friends and didn't already have a lot of trust, but this just built that trust so much more that he knew I was taking care of him. But with the customer, what we did is instead of just trying to fight them, we actually had discussions with them and listened to them, said, okay, that actually, we understand where you're coming from there, or no, I think maybe you're overreaching there. But with the dialogue and showing that we were being empathetic and that we weren't just trying to get out of it. So with that vulnerability we talked about earlier, we did end up giving them a $35,000 credit, but everyone thought that was fair because, hey, we did stuff in a bad way, but hey, this also was on your side. Further to that, that customer, until I left the company, was one of my most loyal customers 6, 7, 8 years later. And the gentleman whose daughter had cancer, he's a very good friend, best work friends. Still talk to him, you know, every week or two, even though we don't work together anymore. So, bit of a humble brag, I guess, but just showing that putting in, so mixing the Scout law a little bit, putting loyalty in with this, showing that you can be trusted and that you will follow through and that you will support both on the employee side and the customer side, just, and it was beneficial all the way around.
But I want to further that and talk about how amazing The Empire Strikes Back is. And here's why.
I don't think anyone can argue with that.
I will fight you if you say otherwise. But we're trying to find relevant quotes about trust in major movies. And it comes up often. We kind of got into a little dialogue about Lando when he's on Cloud City. And he seems like a total jerk who totally just turns them over to the Empire and is like, ugh, you hate him. But actually, it's more than that. He seems like a traitor. He seems untrustworthy. But something happens, and it happens for a reason. So really, what is his character arc, and how does he make it right?
I think you had some better thoughts on this, but I'll take a swing, I guess. In Empire itself, because his character arc extends into Return of the Jedi. Well, I get to movie geek out. This is awesome. So even in that Cloud City sequence, there's the initial betrayal. There's the steps as things are progressing where Vader keeps altering the deal and wants Lando to pray, he alters it no further. And Lando is seeing that realization. And also the position that Lando is in is he is the administrator of Cloud City. He's got all of this business. There's profitability. There's all the people on Cloud City that he's trying to keep safe. He's also trying to keep Han safe as well as he can. He knows Han gets sacrificed pretty quickly, but he's trying to keep Leia and Chewie safe and 3PO in pieces.
Which is really funny. Carrying like a backpack. Sorry.
And again, as things progress, Vader keeps, okay, now Leia's going to my ship. You stay here. I'm going to leave a garrison here. Again, the quote is, this deal's getting worse all the time. But through that arc, what you start seeing is that Lando basically gets fed up with it. And he gets to the point where, okay, I need to do the right thing here. Which is when he, when they're marching Leia and Chewie down in cuffs, that he has his guards surround the Imperials and take over, and Chewie tries to choke him. And then he joins them at that point, and they still don't really trust him. Because he did a lot to warrant not being trusted. But at that point, and this goes into Return of the Jedi, he starts showing consistency in behavior and that he is trying to make up for it. So going to what we started with, that vulnerability that, hey, I screwed up, but I am going to make this right. So he helps them escape Cloud City. He helps save Luke in Return of the Jedi. He is at the beginning. He goes to Jabba's palace. He's putting his life on the line to get Han back. He becomes a general in the rebellion, and he ends up leading the fleet, the battle part of the fleet, the small ship part of the fleet, in the battle against the second Death Star, and ultimately blows it up. So he turns into a hero, and by that point, everyone does trust him.
So it is possible to bounce back when people don't trust you, when trust has been violated.
Was I supposed to say it that quickly?
I don't know.
Oh,
but
I took like a long way to get to that.
No, and I love it. But one, we get to geek out on one of the best movies ever, and it's incredibly relevant. So then there's a couple things in that arc that really stand out. I think first and foremost, it's sometimes trust is broken in the workplace. And that happens in a few different ways. Sometimes it's as small as, you know, someone sends you an email and it gets buried at the bottom and you don't respond. And then you're cleaning out your inbox like a week later and you go, oh no, I never responded to that person. That person probably does not think you're very trustworthy if you didn't reply with a response. And there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. The wrong way, of course, is to not acknowledge it. But the right way is to say, and you read a lot of different things on this, but it's like, oh, don't apologize for not responding sooner. Well, it depends on the length of time. I think that goes a long way.
And just the context of what it's about.
Uh-huh, absolutely. And then making up for it and being thorough in your response. So that's one thing. Another thing, you know, one time I messed up an HSA statement and everybody in the company got funded incorrectly. That was not great. So then I had to call the company. I had to strip back the funds and then refund it. Was it okay in the end? Yes. Did it feel terrible on my part? Yes. Did I live up to my mistake? Absolutely. And we were able to fix it. And then next month they trusted me to do it again. And I did not fail this time. And I corrected and found out where my error was to begin with.
I thought you meant they trusted you to mess it up again.
Oh, well, no. But that's just one example. I mean, it wasn't world ending. And sometimes there are catastrophic things that may happen in a workplace where you do have to term someone. And that's really unfortunate, but it just depends. And so I think what this comes down to in the workplace is, what are the components of trust? And one thing I thought of as we were preparing for this podcast is trust is involuntarily violated when you set preconceived expectations on people and your employees. So what does that mean? If you're not setting clear expectations from the start, you are doomed. If you're not setting, as simple as it sounds, you know, we have an article about, you know, setting expectations for communication. It's really, how do you want to communicate? How can I text you, chat you, email you? What does that look like when I need you? What does feedback look like for you? How should I deliver it? And here's how I like to deliver it. And I had a great chat with someone yesterday saying, yeah, well, when I give feedback, I just like to be direct. It's not because I don't like them, but I just want them to know what needs to get fixed or what needs to get done. And I think even just making that very clear helps establish that trust from the beginning. So when you have a new employee coming, yes, they nailed the interview. They look good on their resume. You're very confident in their ability to do the job. But if you're just putting them there in their job and say, okay, go. Okay, here's your job. You're setting them up for failure. It's great. You trust them to do their job. But if you're not following up with them, they may be doing things in an absolute different way than you wanted them to originally. So then all of a sudden, you're not trusting them to do the work that you wanted them to do.
So there was something interesting I came across while I was doing some research kind of related to that, and just a offshoot thought. The more autonomous a team is, the more, let's say, babying is less tolerated. Which that could, so to your point, if this is a senior person that has done this forever and you're bringing them in to maybe change things, maybe figure out a new way, that doesn't necessarily play with them because they want the autonomy and they kind of assume the trust. So if you go overboard in saying, I trust you, it comes across as micromanagement. Mm-hmm. Which actually is detrimental to the environment. And so all that Gallup quote I gave earlier, mm-hmm. actually goes in the opposite direction. Same thing about general leadership. So when you're the more senior in leadership you are, the less that those expectations are there because you turn into the person setting the expectations. Mm-hmm. Not completely, because there's always someone above you. Mm-hmm. But just there's some nuance there, I guess, yeah. Is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense too. And I think even more critical that the higher you are on the ladder, the more accountable that you are, and knowing that you are a decision maker now, that you are responsible not only for yourself, but everybody underneath you, and that any of your actions do trickle down. And so they trust, the senior management trusts the people below them, but the people below them are looking up to them and trusting that the direction that they are being given is good and solid and is on the right track to success with clear goals and expectations.
Yeah, and actually, when you were talking about the communication piece earlier, again, the higher up that ladder is, the more clear that communication needs to be. Mm-hmm. You can't leave ambiguity in communication at that point, because people will latch on to any nuance and take off with it.
So getting into the components of trust and what that looks like, again, accountability, you know, when you do a values exercise and you're determining, you know, what are your main core values as an individual, accountability for me comes up every single time. It's so important to me to take accountability for my actions. One, it helps me get control of the situation. And two, it helps me learn from my mistakes. And one book that I read, which is Crucial Accountability, it's by the same authors of Crucial Conversations, Patterson, Grenny, Maxfield, McMillan, and Switzer. They talk about how companies that continually allow things to come up without dealing with the breach of promise don't survive very long. And so what they talk about in this book is these promises, and they use the term, quote, something came up. So what came up that prevented you from doing the task or the thing that you wanted to do? And so while these companies are limping along, they're also horrible places to work. And nothing, this is still from the book quote, nothing destroys trust more than casually giving assignments and hoping people will deliver. You may like the fact that your boss doesn't always follow up with you and giving you substantial freedom, but you hate it when others are equally loose and unpredictable. I love this. Heaven help the company that lets things come up, right? So it's holding people to high standards. And here they really talk about, you know, what has come up. Did you prioritize one task or another? And it's not that, it's not the fact that you picked one task or another. It's that you originally committed to the first task and it did not get done. So you're not talking about the work itself because something got done with the work. You're talking about that breach of trust and that breach of promise. I thought that was very powerful. Mm-hmm. And so comes something back to near and dear to my heart, and as business leaders should, having that crucial conversation about how and why that trust was violated. And what can you do differently next time in order to make sure the task gets done and also have some self-reflection from that person? So really having an open coaching conversation with them.
Mm-hmm. So what jumped out at me through all of that is that it then all comes down to communication. Side note.
And I already talked about this too. So in our scout role, again, some things come up for these kids all the time and they can't help it. They're young people. They're learning to prioritize their time. And I firmly believe that if they learn this now, again, being prepared, being trustworthy, this is a great place to do it because they're growing into adults. Someday they're going to have a family of their own. They're going to run a business. They're going to have a job. They have all these different balls to juggle in the air. And one thing that I want to stick with them is knowing if I make a commitment and I can't keep to it, I need to own up to it and be accountable. But also I need to show that I'm still in it and I'm still bought into the program. And that's okay. Last night I was at a networking event at CU Boulder's Go Buffs, and I was talking to students and they were just asking, you know, what are some critical things that I need to do as I start a job? And I told them the simplest thing, thank you, Sherry Harley, for Say Anything to Anyone. I refer to you a lot, is setting expectations for communications is the number one thing. Here's how I like to receive feedback. You can text me, you can call me, and also share how you'd like to get that feedback. So you're already establishing that and making that expectation known. And then also it's doing what you say you're going to do. So if you're a new upstart and you're going to do something, you make sure that you do it. And it's very important. And they ask, you know, how do you manage to work with all those managers or school principals or whatever, you know, wherever I'm working? I'm like, well, I follow through and I make sure it happens. And that's probably the most rewarding part of my job is when I say I'm going to do something and I do it. And then there's the gratitude. That's what makes it all worthwhile. So I think that leads into credibility. So ultimate definition of credibility to me is do what you say you're going to do. So what are your thoughts on credibility?
Yeah, not too much more, actually. There's a little bit of a flavor, and it probably does the same as do what you say you're going to do, is as you consistently do that, it establishes what your knowledge base is, what you actually are capable of. So it feeds into maybe reputation. So you're credible about your reputation and the things that you have done in the past, people say you can do, and you yourself say you can do.
And the last piece as that I put as components of trust really is recognition. One thing you read in engagement surveys is that we don't recognize our people enough. And we don't want people getting big heads or egos, or for whatever reason we don't recognize our people. Small things add up. So when there's a task they've been struggling with, or even there's something they messed up the month before but they didn't that next month, please recognize your employees. That builds the trust.
Did you get recognized for the HSA thing?
No. So sometimes no news is good news. And so, you know, that's not a good example, but
you said mess up 1 month, get it right the next month.
Or, you know, they meet and exceed the expectations next month, or just say, hey, thanks for getting that done. You know, just a simple thank you, even. It doesn't have to be a parade and anything over the top, but hey, thanks for fixing that, getting it done so quickly and efficiently, whatever that may be. It doesn't have to be anything over the top. And a very simple thank you goes along.
I'll go back to one of my favorite things is the authenticity still has to be there. So a random thank you that, so if you say thank you the same way to everyone every day, it comes across as rote. It doesn't come across as genuine. So however, whatever that means for you to be authentic about it, just make sure there's some authenticity there. One that sticks out in my mind is these were some bigger things when this guy, when I would do this for this guy, but he was a huge Lego fan. So when he would do something going above and beyond, I'd find a Lego set that I didn't think he had and have that sent to him. Again, beyond the scope of this probably, but knowing who your people are, knowing what makes them tick, and then when you are doing the recognition, making sure that you're hitting those points.
So as leaders, these are just three small components of what builds trust that add up over time. And ultimately, trust is important because as that Gallup poll survey shows, it drives results, it creates strong workforces, and it also creates strong employees. And so I've been in situations where I've had someone and a leader I've really trusted. We were great, worked together well, a lot of opportunities, saw my potential and was giving me different projects to help me grow in my career. And at one point in my career, I found out that there was a promotional job opportunity that was posted. And if you're in Colorado and you're listening, you know that we have the Equal Pay for Equal Work Act. And so we have to post and make known all jobs and post them internally. And every other job in the organization was posted internally, except this job that I was aware of. Apparently it was, but nobody was told. And so somebody, not saying I wanted the job, but somebody was promoted into a job I potentially could have wanted, but was never told about it. That is absolutely the definition of lack of trust. At that point, I realized that even though this was a great leader, somebody I admired, I did not appreciate that finding loopholes in the work, finding ways to skirt around some of the laws, did not make me want to work for that person anymore. And it didn't feel right, and it didn't feel like the correct candidate was chosen for the role at the end of the day. And things like that can really kill a solid working relationship that you have with someone. And it's unfortunate. And that's why, you know, clarity is also another huge part of trustworthiness.
Mm-hmm. So looking through some of the research, and to be blunt, the ChatGPT stuff I looked at, one thing that came up, which you'll love this, Jess, is trustworthiness itself isn't necessarily the answer to all of this. Accountability has to be paired with that. So just saying I trust you is not going to get business results. I trust you to do this and you follow through, or you trust me to do this and I follow through. That marriage needs to be there.
Boom. Well said. I think that's really good. So if you're Aladdin, right, and you're trying to get Princess Jasmine to ride on a magic carpet ride with you, and she's kind of hesitant, she's like, I just met this guy, he came in this big parade on an elephant, and he wants to marry me, and I'm really mad about it, but, oh, he has a magic carpet ride, and he sticks out his hand, and he says, do you trust me, right? Take, you know, I don't know, that seems kind of creepy to me, and then
Yeah.
But at the same time, that's a bold statement to make to somebody that you barely even know.
And in that particular context, she does know him. She just doesn't know she knows him.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I assume everyone's seen the movie. It, when he does that, do you trust me from the carpet? It's the exact same way he does it when he's trying to help her when she's out in the city. And she recognizes that, and that's when she realizes that it's actually Aladdin, which is interesting because he had established that trust with her. He'd established the friendship with her. So him as Aladdin is trustworthy to her. But he's pretending to be Prince Ali.
Ali Ababwa.
Buzz off. So he's being duplicitous. And not trustworthy there. So she makes a decision that she is going to trust him because of her first impression. And again, going through the theme of the movie, him actually being authentic, favorite word, is what actually wins her over in the end. So him being himself is actually what he needs to be. So the whole arc of trying to be something he's not makes him not trustworthy, whereas when he's himself, he is trustworthy to everyone.
That's good. And I have never thought about a Disney movie in depth like that before, but it's a very relevant example. That staying true to yourself, knowing your values, and when you're that, then people will respect you and follow you. It's when you start to stray and you start to be someone you're not, and make empty promises and do maybe unethical things in your business, that's when things can go south and sour pretty quickly.
Yeah, one thing, and even now, although I'm still working on my sales here, when I'm in sales situations and in my old company, one thing I would never do is bring up my competitors in a negative manner, because my view is I'm going to show you how well I can do this, not how much better I am than someone else. So just talking about values, that is the value I espoused when I was in those situations, because it didn't feel right to me to just try and trash someone else. It's if we're going movies, and yeah, I know you don't like these ones, and The Last Jedi, Rose tells Finn that we're going to win because of who we love, not who we hate. And it's just kind of that same philosophy.
I like it. Just the last one that, you know, Rose and Jack on the Titanic. Rose absolutely trusted Jack and everything about the situation she wasn't supposed to, because he was a third class passenger and she was a first class passenger. And he taught her how to trust in herself and be brave and really get out of a bad situation. Though it didn't end well for him. This is not a debate about enough room on the door. But she did trust him, and by trusting him, she saved her life and she escaped a really terrible relationship. But overall, the best way to wrap this up is a few things. It's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to own up to the mistake. And I think if you're in a bad work situation where you make a mistake and it's held above you, or trust is weaponized against you. And what I mean about that is, I've heard it said, oh, well, you're going to have to build back your trust with me. And they sound it almost like a threat. I would encourage you to find a different workplace, because you deserve a place where you can be trusted and you can be valued for who you are, and we're human. And so I think something I've had to work very hard on is, in the pursuit of what I thought was perfectionism, any mistake violated trust in myself. That makes you not trust who you are as a person and your ability to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jess.
You're welcome.
Well, we appreciate everyone listening. Like and subscribe and all the things. And you guys have a wonderful day.